Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. And because it's one of those holiday weekend kind of weekends, I need your help, just like last week, right? There's a lot of people out, right? And in fact, most of these programs are all recorded, as we know, as we head during this time of year. But with the market in such turmoil, no recordings today. I thought there might be some questions, some discussion, and so I'm here. And hopefully you are too. And our number is, that's the cue, right? 580-5436, 580-KIDO. It's also dave@petsofinancial.net. You know, it is. I was just having this discussion this morning, right? And it was just, you know, so what is going on in the market? What are you going to talk about today? And it was just, what do you say about a market that has a day like, let's just say Thursday, let alone Wednesday, up 1,000 points, right? The greatest one-day point gain, not percentage gain, but point gain ever. On the heels of whatever, you know, epic decline on Christmas Eve. And there's a number of things, of course, that go into this that are, the best answer really is we don't really know. Because we don't know how the computers and the algorithms, which are 85% of the trade, are geared. Is it a tweet? Is it a, what data point is going to send the market jumping up or down? With 85% of the trades being done by high-speed computers that react and trade much more quickly, not even close. It's not even, there's no chance for human beings. Much more quickly than human beings can. And they do it in unison. In other words, they're all geared up the same way, right? They're all fired up the same way. We are going to be buying if the president tweets something good about China. Boom. If it's negative, out. And then they sell the futures contracts and they can beat them down mercilessly. So we get wild swings. And there's lots of arguments out there. We should have the uptick rule. Okay, what's the uptick rule? All right, let's get in the weeds just a little bit. Just a tiny, tiny, tiny bit. Okay? Don't worry. It's not that hard. The uptick rule simply says when you're trying to sell down, right? You're trying to beat the market down. You want it to go down. That's how you make money. Because later when you cover your short by buying it back, you are going to buy it back at a lower price and make lots of money. Okay? No different than buying, hoping it goes up, and then you sell it, and then you can make money that way. Right? So we're beating it down. But sometimes the computers are like beating it down constantly. And they used to have this thing called the uptick rule, meaning you could not just keep selling it down. You had to wait for it to tick up. Just a little bit. Just a tiny up. Boom. That's all. Just one little tick up, and then you could sell it again. But you couldn't just go sell, and knock it straight down. Now, this served the market extremely well for decades, and they got rid of it. And there's many, many people a lot smarter than I am out there and certainly have a lot more influence that are saying, this has got to stop. This has got to stop. So there are a lot of things being looked at right now. So as we look at this and we say, well, why would I want to play in this? I'll come to that later because I think it's important to put this in the right, right long-term perspective. Why play is a good question. Why? So I'll come back to that later. I'll probably do it in the second hour. But what we have right now is a circumstance where people are scrambling to try to tell us what happened to the market, why it's going down. Yeah, it's because of tariffs. Tariffs have been going on for months, and the market was at all-time highs. Everybody was happy, and we're still in tariffs. But now it's a world-ending big deal. Does this make sense to you? It doesn't to me that 3 months ago we didn't care much about tariffs, and now we do. That doesn't make any sense. Well, Trump's in chaos. Well, what about the chaotic White House when he first took over? Remember the people coming and going, the spokesman this and out. Yeah, that's all brand spanking new, that there's chaos in the White House. Well, global growth, an absolutely fair point. Global growth has slowed down, no doubt about it. No doubt about it. No doubt about it. But is that enough? Aren't we talking about U.S. stocks here? We are. So when we look at this and we think of all the different reasons why, what we end up doing, especially financial reporters that have no clue most of the time what the heck's going on in the market, they're just burping stuff every day. I mean, it's like a trader whispers in their ear, oh yeah, heard this, boo, 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 boo. And they're just burping stuff. There's very few of them that even really have any concept of what the markets are about. What's driving them? And that's not their job. It really isn't. It's to ask questions, right? But when we're sitting there listening to these data points, not information, not wisdom, certainly, just data points as to why the market's doing what it's doing, it's a rearview mirror look back that says, we don't have any idea why the market moved 850 points, but we've got to tell you something. You can't think, you're never going to hear a report, I have no idea why the market moved 850 points, because it makes no sense to anybody on any planet why in the morning it's down 650 points, in the afternoon it's up 250 points. Nobody thinks that that's normal. No, that makes no sense to anybody. But it does to Wall Street reporters because they have to tell us that. Yeah, well, on the market fell again this week because of Trump. Trump's it's always his fault. Market went up not because of Trump, though. No, not Trump's. No. It's always going to be some grab at a data point. And it makes us think we have some grasp of what's going on. And we don't. So why play? I'll come back to that. Let's go ahead and take some calls, okay? I'll come back to that. Maybe, like I said, in the second hour, but we're going to talk about that. Why would we play in something like this? It's this that feels this broken, right? All right, let's go to Ken in Nampa. Ken, thanks for calling. Go ahead, please. All right, what am I doing wrong here? I can't hear Ken. Ken, are you there?
Yes, good morning. I'm here.
Oh, there we go. Okay, we got you back. All right, fire away, Ken.
Yeah. I've been investing for many, many years, and I've accumulated stacks of reports, paperwork.
Mm-hmm.
How much of that stuff should you save?
Ah, man, that's a great question. Almost none of it.
That's what I was hoping for.
Yeah, almost none of it. Get rid of the old stuff. You have to make sure you've got cost basis on things, right? Okay, that's all. And any financial reports, throw them away. They're useless unless there's some reason you want to keep a Berkshire Hathaway report, right? But you can still get them online. So why keep it? Yeah.
Okay, good. Yeah, because you get monthly reports, and I've been in this for over 30 years, and I got files of it, and I'm getting old. I need to get rid of a lot of it. So.
I'm glad you're saying that. That's a good idea. It'll feel great, too, won't it, just to take boxes down and shred them and be done?
Thank you very much.
You got it.
I'll keep listening.
Bye. All right. No, Ken, great question. I'm sure lots of people have it, so good for you. Thanks for asking.
Yep. Bye.
Have a great day. Bye-bye. And let's go ahead and go to Jim. Jim, thanks for calling. Go ahead, please.
Morning.
Good morning, sir.
Yeah, like what Ken was talking about, I have periodically gotten books on, and nobody's going to read those. Not even a CPA could do it. And if you really think about the cost to the corporation, it'll drive you crazy.
Oh.
The best thing to do, I guess, is recycle. At least you can get some money, help the recycling,
Exactly. No, you're right. It's unfortunate that the federal laws have not kept up with the world, but that never happens. Government never keeps up.
You can get all this stuff, I guess, online. Some of them I kind of like to get, like railroads, hopefully at least they'll put a nice color photo in there. that for me will make it worth something.
I know. You have, do you frame them? Do you frame the locomotives around?
No, I have haven't gone that far, mm-hmm. but I do have a collection of pictures. I mean, that's my passion is, you know, collecting railroad stock and stuff like that.
Good.
But you mentioned the tariffs, and you said, for instance, why 3 months ago? You said the tariffs have been around, and you mentioned something like 3 months. Why was the market going up 3 months ago, and now it's down?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Well, anyway, the obvious answer is it takes a while for the effects of the tariffs to kick in.
That's a fair point, but I'm going to reverse that. Remember, markets are trying to think ahead, and so the initial, let's go back, because the tariff announcement started, almost a year ago now, right?
Right.
You know, the very beginning of 18, very beginning. And so that's when they started, and the market really did have a problem with that. I mean, it really did react, right? And it was, you know, maybe a couple percent, but it reacted to that instantly. Well, there was no effect of those tariffs yet. It's reacting with the idea that it's going to have an adverse effect. Now, as time went by, we found that there was no adverse effect. There really wasn't economically. And there are. Don't get me wrong. I'm sure there's businesses even here locally that have had an effect from that. But the overall economy has been continuing to accelerate throughout this year. So the effect of that was none. Now, 3 months ago, what I'm saying is with the key to 3 months ago is that's when the market started to really have some problems. And then we were all putting our finger in the wind trying to figure out why, right? Oh, it must be tariffs. It must be Trump. It's got to be Trump. It is Trump. Trump is the enemy of the planet, so it's got to be Trump. You know, so that kind of thing was all coming up, and we were trying to figure out why the market was doing what it was doing. And that's why I'm saying 3 months. It's not because now suddenly tariffs were the problem. The market was having a problem beginning about 3 months ago.
Then I guess that my reply would be, I guess, then it's back to the algorithms or whatever.
Yes. Oh, no, I think it is. The algorithms, the black boxes, yep, the high-frequency trading, it's 85% of the market. And what I'm saying is, I'm giving the bad news because I'm ticked off like everybody else. This creates an environment where people don't want to play.
Right.
And I've spent my life telling people, if you want to get rich, you can start off as a poor person, put a couple bucks away, and retire rich if you buy and invest stocks and you don't overreact. But this kind of nonsense makes people think like, well, I think I'll just go buy a cup of coffee. Remember, a cup of coffee a day for 40 years is $1.2 million?
Well, okay. You know, I mean, the average, you know, investor could start using that horrible R word, rigged, you know?
Yeah.
So, well, you know, it sounds to me like it's rigged. Why would I want to play, you know?
Correct, which was why I want to address that today. And, yes, we have to play, but this is why it incites frustration, anger in people like me, not because markets go up and down, because that's an enormous, I mean, Warren Buffett or I'm not likening myself to his brilliance. What I'm saying is, as a long-term investor, I love volatility. Love it. Because what I just did, for example, yesterday is, or 2 days ago, is buy some Amazon 100 points below where it is today and 600 points below where it was 3 months ago. So this is called opportunity, right?
Right.
And it's not my only holding, and I got to watch all my other holdings get crushed. I'm not telling you I knew what stepped aside. Just took a little cash, went in. That's what you do if you're a long-term investor. You take advantage of sales.
I'm addicted to buying stocks, and I still do.
Right.
It's kind of like, I hate to say, you know, well, luckily I'm not in debt. I don't have a bunch of expenses, and I hate to see a bunch of cash laying around. So it rolls in, and I invest, and so I'm still doing it. I mean, you know, so.
Yeah. I'm just saying that there's plenty of volatility out there with news items, with real news, not made-up machine news. Real news, there's plenty going on out there that we can go ahead and get tremendous bargains and get people all worried about stuff. It's
well, you know,
fine.
If it wasn't amped up so much by the news media, you know, oh, my God, it went up. Oh, my God, it went down, you know.
Yeah, it's true.
And things used to be a lot more, I don't know, sane or whatever. But anyway, coming the next year, it's an odd year. For some reason, I don't know, I like even years, even though I'm kind of odd myself. So, I don't know, whatever. But see, right. As long as you've got good health, then you've got pretty much everything.
You do. You do. We live in the most abundant time. And I don't say this lightly. I say this with, you know, with complete recognition that this is true. Completely understanding that this is the most abundant time, the greatest time, and we are alive in the greatest country ever in the history of the world. Is this not a blessing greater than that? There is not. We've already won the lottery. You're alive today in America. There's no lottery greater than that. The only reason that we seem to be unhappy about it is because we play the comparison game because somebody has a little nicer car than you. It's amazing. It's astounding to me because we have such abundance. And that's the real picture. And that's also the real picture as to why people need to invest, even if it's this chaotic. Jim, thanks for your call.
Thanks.
Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye now. And our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. We'll be right back. Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Thanks to our callers already, and I would appreciate if you would ring us up yourselves. Also, if you prefer, email dave@petsofinancial.net. Let's go ahead and use an email, okay? We've got one from Joe. With U.S. valuations, U.S. stock valuations, much lower, would it make sense to move dollars from emerging markets to U.S. stocks now? Yes and no. I think that clearly, if the U.S. stabilizes, you're going to see the emerging markets stabilize as well. And emerging markets have been just crushed over the last couple of years. Now, our markets are down, but they're not crushed down. And so, again, we're seeing valuations very, very low in the U.S., and I think any new dollars can certainly go there. But I'm not sure I would want to move unless you had to have way too much over in emerging markets. I'm not sure I would reallocate there. One area that I do think you can reallocate from, but I've felt this way for a very long time, would be any kind of bond positions and or cash positions. Now, if you have them and you haven't been investing, I think this is a great opportunity to say, okay, I'm going to go ahead and catch these lower valuations. In other words, if you're fully invested, I don't think there's a lot to do here. But if you're not fully invested, there's plenty to do here. And you can almost throw a dart. Everything out there other than bonds looks very, very attractive. We have got corporate profits continue. Nobody thinks they're going to go down next year. And I mean nobody thinks corporate profits are going down. Earnings peaking or whatever has been talked about for 8 years. And they really did. I believe it was 2011 where earnings growth slowed down. And actually earnings, I think, although their earnings were good, they slowed down a good bit. And the market took a pause. But the reality is they've been talking about this for a very, very, very long time. But doomsdayers, they don't ever change. They just continue to bang the same drum, bang, 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 and hope that somewhere along the lines they're going to be right. And as they bang, they're right once in a while. They do get to be right. But are they right when you're talking about a temporary right? Are you really right when something temporarily declines and you're out again? You miss all the move back to all-time highs? Or were you right when you said the market was going to crash when it was at 10,000? And now we've moved from 26,000 down to 23. No, you're wrong. Just plain old period wrong. There's nothing right about that. And so they don't change their tune. They don't change their tune at all. So we continue to have that happen all the time. So right now, anyway, Joe, thank you for the email. I just don't think that there's anything that you want to rush around and change because everything has been taken down. Everything. So if you have fundamental reasons why you owned emerging markets, it's in the right amount, you thought they were a bargain, they're even more of a bargain now. And I grant you, over the last 3 months, they have outperformed the U.S. relatively, but they're still down. And they have certainly underperformed the U.S. and everywhere else over the past 3 years. So I'd hang tough, unless you have a terribly overlarge position. position there. And our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. Okay, so I ran this fascinating thing, and I find this kind of stuff fascinating. In fact, we're going to send it out to our clients. And it's about a mutual fund. I'm not going to tell you the name of the fund because then I've got all these disclosures and stuff. And I'm not trying to sell you on the fund. I really am not. Because it's a story about the market. And we've shared stories similarly to this. But I want to tell you this particular fund has been around since before 1950, 1948 to be exact. It is not an all-stock fund. It's designed to pay out income. So it, by nature, has a much lower volatility than the market. So I'm not telling you a story about how you're just simply going to make a gazillion dollars because the market's going to go higher. But when I saw this, it's one of those things when you're in the turmoil, and this was about a week ago. And I just want to tell you, the reason I'm telling you the story, telling you the long story of this, is because it, no matter how long you've been investing, no matter how much you talk about it, like I do, you always refer back to the basics. You always stop and you go, I just need a little bit of coaching, a little bit of encouragement here. My tank's a little empty here. These algorithm trading things, these black boxes, this bugs me. What's going on here? And you always go back. And I go back and I maybe read a little John Templeton and Peter Lynch and, you know, read a few Warren Buffett quotes. You know, read a chapter of an investment book that's, you know, classic investment book. Not one of the 100 out this year about the coming doom of 2000 and whatever. Okay, but a classic book. But when you come across sometimes a piece and then you really think about it, you know, an investment piece, or you really think about something like, what if you bought the market after it, every time after it fell 10%, right? You just bought it. How often, say, 3 years later, would you be ahead? Is it like 90% of the time? Is it 98% of the time? How often, right? Because we know intuitively it's a lot, right? Because the market's up most of the time anyway. It's up way high percentage of any three-year period, let alone one that we've already had a correction. So you start thinking about that, and then you start really thinking about it, and then you realize that, in fact, it's here it is. There was a piece done about this. Yeah, I'm going to take credit because they did it when I asked them to about 10 years ago, 10, 12 years ago. Anyway, here's what happens with a fund that focuses on dividend-paying stocks. I can't tell you that this is if it's a growth fund, okay? But you'll get the point because it doesn't matter. It's a story of the market. So when you get all fussed and you think you have to hit the bottom, you're wrong. You're wrong. So what we're really looking at is if in any year, in any amount of money, this fund loses money, how many times during all rolling three-year periods after that, right? So if you lose it in January, you're talking about January to January 3 years later, right? Anytime it's down for the year, what happens after that? And the answer is unbelievably good. I mean unbelievably good. The rates of return in the coming years, in the worst case scenario, is over 9%. Are you ready for this? Let's do a what if. What if in any period of time, not even a calendar year, it falls 10%? Not just falls like 2%. It falls 10. Because we ask it initially, I'm sorry, initially not to fall 10%, just any down year, any down year, down 0.5%. I want to know what it does right after that. For example, in 1999, it did fall 0.5%. In 2000, it was up over 20. I'll take it. But what if at any moment, not year end, any moment, it's down 10? What happens on the trailing three-year periods? Well, it's happened 7 times since 48. So how many times do you think it's down 3 years later? Now, remember, this includes 2008. Remember the financial crisis, which went really deep. It includes 1973 and 4, which in many ways was the worst bear market ever, because it lasted a long time. And prices also went down nearly 50%. How about the tech bubble? So we're talking about 3 periods of time where the market lost nearly 50% or more. And the answer is none. So when we talk about being long-term investors, and this is where you get really excited, then you kind of say, how can I miss when it's down 10? Because guess what? It's down 10. Well, it was before this week. Don't know if it still is. Certainly stocks are, but that's the point. Not this fund is not the point. The point is reinvesting income in something that pays income, like dividend-paying stocks, for a three-year period. 3 years is nothing. Well, what is the market going to do next month? Why do you care? If it does what it did that next month, then you have even higher returns coming. Don't you get it? Now, I don't know if the break-off point is like 5% or is it 7.5%. Do you see what I'm saying? I don't know where the break-off point is when you cross over and you've lost, say, 7.5% in all of the hundreds and hundreds of three-year periods. Have you never lost money? I don't know where the break-off is. I just said arbitrarily, what if it's 10? Let's pick 10. And there's only 7 periods that it's actually fallen 10% or more. But we don't wait for the or more. We just say at 10, boom, and then it keeps going down like in 08. But guess what? When it's going down like in 08 and you're reinvesting those dividends, what are you doing? You're compounding those shares that are going to produce more income. You have more free shares than you would have had without the decline, which is why, like a coiled spring, it just gets tighter and tighter and tighter, and it explodes higher when the market finally turns. It doesn't have to come all the way back because you've been buying so many shares at really reduced prices that when it comes back a little bit, you come back a lot, which is why people don't understand the simple statement made decades ago, I believe by Davis, that people don't realize it, but they make all of their money in bear markets. They just don't know it at the time. Because it's about our behavior. It's about how we act when our portfolios are down. Do we reach into our wallets and write a check when we get depressed prices? Or do we like it, like the store analogy, right? Or do we run to the store and we shop the big after Christmas sales and then we say, hey, would you please, you know, you're at Macy's, you pick out, you know, like $2,000 worth of clothes and you for $1,000, like you got all this stuff for like the next year, you're all decked out, right? And you say, hey, here, take these and put them behind, and when you mark them back up to full price, give me a call and I'll come pick them up. Nobody would do that. But when it comes to the market, we're like, I don't know if I should buy any Apple. I liked it better when it was at $210 a share. Okay. And now you don't like it at $1.50. Yeah. Because it might go to, I heard a guy saying it's going to go to $140 a share. See, we just don't think about the long-term nature of our actions when we do that. Got to. Anyway, I just thought this was the most incredible thing. And so just playing around with it, I just wanted you to understand, it's just one of those things that no matter how long you do this, it's always, always hard when the markets are hard. We have to understand and go back to the basics from time to time. Have to. It's what keeps us grounded. Our number is 580-5436. It's 580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net if you prefer email. I prefer some phone calls. Let's do it right now. We'll be right back. Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. Please do join us on the phones, okay? Like I said last week, I need your help. You know, there's a lot of folks that are kind of kicking back, doing nothing this time of year. As we know, these are often recordings, and I'm here live as the market has been rather exciting. So I did want to be here in case people had questions, and so I am. How about that? Now you need to be here too. Our number is 580-5436. It's 580-KIDO. If you prefer email, it's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. All right, so we've got a nice long segment here, and before we get any callers, I wanted to talk about this from last week. This was from a call about some ideas on Percy options, and as you approach retirement, what kind of shifts and changes should you be making, right? And I don't have all of the Percy options in front of me, but I can tell you that they're in general, and it's probably good we don't, because I just want to get a point across, not just with Percy, but any 401k. You don't have to look at it and go, oh, well, I don't have those options because I'm not in Percy, and tune out. It's the same thought process as we near pulling the trigger for retirement. Now, a couple things that may not exist for you in a 401k that does with Percy. If you're in Percy, you're in Percy, meaning you've got a pension coming. You have a state pension that's unbelievably good. It's ridiculous. And somewhere down the road in the decades, we are going to have a problem, just like all the states do, funding it. It's just the way it is with people living so long. So far, it's not a problem because the state has been responsible and has been trying to stay out front of the funding. But reality is, this means that people on a state pension don't have to save as much. But what is fascinating to the human, to each human, is that they don't see that as an asset. They just see that as income. So the only thing they worry about is the amount of money they have, say, in the market. I've literally seen, this is a really true story, seen pensions that are worth $2 million, right? Government employees, long-term government employees have a pension. You take it to present dollar amounts because they're maybe getting $8,000 a month, something like that, right? $10,000 we've seen, right? A month, guaranteed for life, 65 years old. That's a couple million bucks right there to buy that kind of pension, okay? So we have this $2 million, 100% guaranteed. Can't move. Maybe you even layer some Social Security on it. Same story. You can't say, you know what? I want that to be in the market. I think the market's cheap, dear, whatever. You can't. So you have $2 million. I've seen people freak out about the $120,000 they have in a 401k. Well, are you living on it? No, but I'm nearing retirement. Well, what does that matter? Well, are you using the money? No, but, you know, I might, you know. Okay. What you're looking to do, honestly, this is true of humans, right? We're figuring out something to fuss about, right? I mean, because that's not normal. Like I've got a $2 million pension, I'm going to worry about $100,000. Really? Why? That's like less than 5% of your portfolio. Well, because I want to find a reason to freak out. That is exactly what I'm saying. We do this, and we'll do that in all aspects of our life, right? I mean, everything would be really great. Family's doing well. But we got to figure out how somebody has a toothache, right? I mean, and it's the most horrible thing on the planet. It doesn't matter. We figure stuff out. But we ought to know that about ourselves. We need to measure this you can be all freaked out because that's who you are, whatever, and you can stay in that world because that's where you get energy or something. I don't know why you'd stay there, but okay, you do. So you stay there. What I'm saying, though, is we don't want to manage our investments by emotions. So put it in the right context. What's this money for? If you're in Percy and you're getting near retirement, are you going to be living off this money or not? Is it nest egg money? Is it long-term care money? Is it money to kick in later? Or is it money you really are going to be living on just to supplement your income now? And that's fine if it is. But let's put it in the right context before we wonder and say, this is how I'm going to invest it, and this is how and why I'm concerned because I'm nearing retirement. You're concerned why? Because I'm going to roll it over to an IRA and I'm going to put it back in the market. Then why are you worried about it if you're not using it? Now, let's pretend you are, or you're going to be using some income from it, okay? And this is where I think most people are drawn into that discussion, and we need to, at some point, talk about the dynamic income and regular retirement income, okay? I promise to talk about that as well, maybe in the second hour. So we talk about that all as you're leaning into and you're thinking about, how do I reposition my portfolio? Remember, when you retire, let's pretend it's a year out. You retire 1 year away. That is not an end point. It's a change point. Really important distinction. We're not going to end our investment plan and take our dollar bills and put them under the bed. That's not what we're doing. We're going to change and turn it into income. Cost of living adjusted, all the days of my life, no matter how long I live. A big statement. Difficult to do. But it doesn't mean we take it out and stop investing. Now, we have to change the way it's invested. So as we're heading to retirement, it doesn't look like cash. It doesn't look like short-term bonds. It looks like a portfolio gearing for income for 30 plus years. That's a different thought process. And we've talked about how that works and creating reservoirs and things like that. We've talked about that and creating income producing things that grow faster than the rate of inflation. All of those things we've talked about, and we will continue because it is a complex, complicated thing. And I'll probably talk some more in the second hour as we talk about dynamic versus straight retirement income. But the idea that we want to be changing our Percy options greatly is overstated. When you're within 1 year, 6 months, let's say, I think that contributions, unless the market is down severely, contributions should be made in cash. Just put it in the cash account. Why? Because you're not really freaking out about what your stocks are doing. You want to make sure you've got that cash cushion to live on for a few months once you retire. Okay, if you're needing the income, this is totally, when I retire, the day I retire, I'm going to want some income from this portfolio. Then we want to start generating some of that income from the portfolio the day after retirement. Then we have to be thinking about it. Actually, about 3 years out, we start changing the portfolio. A year out, we need to change it dramatically to produce income for the next 30 years, not the next 30 days. So what we want to do as we're getting near retirement is we want to be thinking about equity income, income-oriented mutual funds, okay? Those are options in every 401k. Those are ones that might say something like dividend advantage or something along those lines where they're paying high dividends. And I wouldn't worry about the rates of return because they're not going to be the same as a growth fund. Don't compare a silly growth fund that owns Google, Amazon, Netflix, and Priceline to a dividend paying fund. They're not the same. They're not designed to do the same thing. So you sit there and go, well, these guys did 12% a year and these guys are doing 6. They must be stupid. No, they're not stupid. They're generating income. So don't be a dull. I mean, come on. Don't do that. Don't compare apples and oranges. So we're comparing the funds in there, the dividend paying ones, the income oriented ones. Those are what we're trying to do because we want to buy the dividend increasing funds. Because we want our income to be higher 5 years from now, 10 years from now, 20 years from now. That's how you do it. And that's going to be the core. Around that core, you're going to have different things that produce income. I get it, whether it's some bonds that to give you a cushion for when markets go down. You don't have to sell anything off. But we're generally shifting the portfolio, not killing the portfolio, shifting it to income-oriented things. That's what you're doing as you enter into a retirement. It's not that dramatic. It's a shift. So hopefully that answered your question, and I thank you for giving me a week to... We just didn't have time when your call came in last week. So as you approach retirement, depends on how close and whether you're living on the income or not. It is not a circumstance of all... Everybody's in the same bucket. If you're not living on it because you've got other pensions, Social Security, Percy, that's all you're going to be living on. This is just extra money you're just going to have invested and maybe take a trip down the road somewhere. There's no reason to be changing it dramatically. You can always look for equity income if you want. They've been a very good performing area. And they don't have as much risk. They really don't. But to move the portfolio to bonds or cash is simply reading an AARP brochure that doesn't apply to you, right? Or a magazine, whatever, AARP magazine. And this is one of the dangers, if I can just kind of step out of that mode a little bit and say, this is one of those terrible dangers of going, you know, go to a seminar selling you on equity index annuities. You remember, you know, the kind that, you know, you don't have any, you get market participation with no risk, right? Yeah, yeah. And I visited Mars yesterday. These are just the absurdities that people toss out, but particularly why it's important during tumultuous times to avoid them, to avoid going to seminars. Oh, but it's a free meal. I'm just getting information. No, you're not. You're getting a one-sided sales pitch, a very hard sales pitch, as a matter of fact. And with the way insurance laws are compared to other rules, like securities rules, you have to understand that they aren't bound by the same rules at all. They can pretty much say whatever they want. They really can. They really, truly can. And we're pushing, and I really believe the state is looking at it and looking at tightening up those laws. I hope they are. I mean, they might have, when we met, they might very well have just been going pat, pat, pat on the head. Let's get this guy out of here. But that would be terrible. I just don't think that they're bad people. I think they care. I just think they were unaware of how bad it was. But anyway, you have to understand there really are not the laws there to protect you. They say things that aren't true. Why do you go to that? Why? Don't be that cheap. I'm cheap, but I'm not that cheap. You don't need a free meal. Even your grandmother knew that. No such thing as a free lunch. There is not. There is not. So don't do that. The next step I want to say regarding that, okay, is there's also out there, there's a huge and unfortunately growing predatory group out there of attorneys preying on senior citizens and the charges can be astronomical. Oh, we're going to do a Medicare planning for you, and you need a trust, and you ought to be scared to death if you have to go through probate. And your bill will only be $10,000. And you can be talking to somebody that has almost no assets. Like, what do you have? Well, I've got my house and a bank account. I mean, nothing else. And okay, on the bank account, that's in my daughter's name, too. Okay. Well, I'm scared of probate. Why? You won't have any probate. I won't have any probate. No. No, you won't. Anything your daughter's name's on just goes to her. Really? Yeah. Well, I have a trust. Well, the attorney knows more about it than I do. Right? So don't go to those. Those are seminars to sell you on a trust that you may not need. Look, we don't do them. And I don't care if you do them, particularly, other than the sense of wrong, right? So if you need the names of estate planning attorneys, call our office. We don't do it. We don't get a kickback. I don't get a trip to Disneyland, but we're happy to give you names of real estate planning attorneys. Okay? There's lots of them around. They're good people. If you just need a will or you just need to talk to somebody, you don't even need a will, they won't sell you one. They may charge you for a visit. And, you know, get out of here. You're fine. Go. Don't worry about it. That's what you need if that's what's worrying you. But you don't need to go to a seminar and find yourself in some horrible place with senior abuse. It is rampant out there. It's not just in insurance. It's most certainly in the legal profession as well. So be careful. Don't go to those things. Please, don't go to those things. It won't help. All right, we're going to talk in the next hour. I want to talk about dynamic income in retirement versus static income in retirement. If you will, it's dynamic is, of course, going to be changing. And how do we gear a retirement to do that? Which is really very interesting. And also, we'll touch on, again, the basics of regular retirement income off of your pile. How do we do that? Especially, we got to think about this, especially with people living to be 100 years old. Did you hear about that guy? I got to tell this story real fast before we go to the break. That guy that last week, the oldest man in the United States, 112 years old, loves cigars and whiskey. Cheers, huh? All right, we got to get out of here, and we'll talk about retirement income planning and hopefully talk to you in the next hour. We'll be right back after a break. Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. Hour number two upcoming, and of course, I want you to fully understand these are my opinions and my opinions only, and we are not here at all to tell you to buy or sell anything. It's just not what we do or believe in any way, shape, or form. That's all noise. That's all nonsense. And the idea that we're going to figure out what the market's going to do, or you need to zig here, you need to hedge there, you need to do that there. Or the idea that you are going to be able to buy some kind of product that locks your money up for the next 10 years. It's going to magically produce amazing amounts of income that you could get nowhere else in your life. And you don't have to pay any commissions, because don't worry, the insurance company takes care of all of that. And you don't have to pay anything at all, and you get market participation with no risk. No, you don't. I mean, we sometimes just have to grow up. Just don't. You know, it might as well be snake oil, for crying out loud. I mean, that's just silliness. We go through this all the time. Oh, yeah, I need to do this or this. Like I was saying at the end of the hour, it's just, this is some of the dangers of all kinds of things you hear or you read. You read a little article in AARP, which I'm sure is just a phenomenal magazine, just phenomenally deep thought about something about investing, and you're like, oh, I don't know if I'm doing that. I mean, with absolutely no context to the entire portfolio or what you're trying to do. I wonder if I need to have emerging market bonds. I better check about that. And no idea what they are, how they would fit in a portfolio. Because you can't do that in two pages of sixth grade writing, which is what it is. I'm not picking on AARP. Money Magazine, Forbes, Fortune, an article in the Wall Street Journal. Not pointless to read, but it is if you don't understand what you're reading. It's not like, oh, I need to get my pad of paper out and put down and get my ideas together for how I'm going to build a portfolio. Let me start reading two-page articles. Makes no sense. Let me go to that seminar, get some more information, grab my pad of paper. I'll figure out how to manage my portfolio. No. Stop it. We've got to quit succumbing to those kinds of nonsensical things. It doesn't make any sense. None at all. Okay, I want to talk about a dynamic versus a static retirement income. And first, I have to put it this way, okay? Retirement income planning in retirement is complex, it's difficult, and I don't feel like you can get it at the first go, especially because I can't draw you a picture, okay? But I'm going to try to draw a word picture here and give you a flavor of what happens. And then from there, let's roll that into what a dynamic income might look like, okay? Now, we have all seen these. You can go to our website. They're all the same, right? It's called a Monte Carlo simulation, which means it does a million or more calculations in less than a second and tells you the theoretical probabilities of an outcome of taking out a certain percentage of income for the next 30 years out of a portfolio. Complete and utter BS. Total BS. It's our attempt as human beings. It totally is. Our attempt at putting a number on something that we don't know, to try to know an outcome we can't know. We're terrified. My mountain of money is at risk, and it's supposed to provide income all the days of my life, cost of living adjusted, and I can't outlive it. Tough to get a job at 90 years old. Yeah, it is. So what do? I got to find something I can do, right? So we run it through the Monte Carlo simulation. Why do I say it's such BS? When everybody else counts on it, shows it, gives us the numbers, it's an 89% probability if you take out 4% a year. No, oh, I'm going to take out 3.8. And so that makes it all better and all good, and I'm over 90% now. 90%. So are you going to hop in the airplane and fly to Florida if there's a 10% chance you're not getting there? Well, we all accept it's 90% certainty, so that's okay. 90% is pretty good. Best you can do. And it is. Because here's the super secret part. Okay? Are you ready? You can't guarantee the future. Nobody can. You don't know what's going to happen. You can run a billion Monte Carlo simulations. By the way, they'll come up with the same number, which is completely ridiculous and stupid. And I'll come back to that in a minute. And we can go, oh, God, I know what I can do now. No, you don't. You don't know at all what you can do. Because you're not dead yet. After you're dead, we would have, could have known for sure what you could have done. The future's unknown. And as soon as you grab that and accept it, it makes it a lot easier to hear the rest. A whole lot easier. But here's why the Monte Carlo simulation is stupid. Off the rails, stupid. When we're sitting here in a zero interest rate environment, and yes, interest rates have come up. I am aware of that. Thank you. You don't need to send me an email right now on that. For the past 8 years, we've been running Monte Carlo simulations that show a 60%. Go to Vanguard's website. They show the same thing today. Non-thinking, just do the Monte Carlo simulation. You have a 90% certainty taking out 4% per year with 3% cost of living increases and never run out of income. 90% certainty. Now, hold on. Now, let me just make sure I understand. So if I were to put 40% of my money, almost half, just in case you weren't, you know, aware of what 40 was, almost half of my money in government bonds that are yielding less than 2%, I have a 90% chance of success pulling out 4 with 3% cost of living, which implies 7. Okay, so let's see. So half my portfolio, or a little less than half of my portfolio, is guaranteed, 100% guaranteed, to come up more than 5% short every single year. That looks like a successful plan to me. Doesn't need any modification in my world. Let's stick with the same thing because, after all, I'm an academic and we have taught the same way for 100 years. We stand in front of a room of children and we do it the exact same way as we always have. And we in the academic world, the super smart people in colleges, this is what we've taught and we've run it through the computers and this is what worked. But it won't work. Can't you see? So we can't change. That's why it's silly. We can't change our thought process, and we have to recognize when things, we have to use our common sense, okay? So common sense says this won't work. But we do want to be thinking about building a portfolio along those lines with some modifications. When times change. This is not a guessing thing. Like, I think the market's going to go down, so I need to get out of the market. That's not a timing decision. It's simply looking at the ground conditions and saying, I can't earn enough on my bonds. What do I do differently? Okay? So we create these portfolios. Now, a regular portfolio, which I believe you could draw up to 5%, fairly aggressive, by making some minor modifications to our basic 60-40 portfolio. That is, it's okay to buy bonds when interest rates are high. High enough that they're bringing or doing most, if not all, of their part. Okay? Then it's perfectly fine. We don't want to take risk to take risk. We're not trying to risk. We're trying to make sure we don't run out. But we have to make modifications. So what we're doing is we're simply saying this. And here's the picture part. Ready? So think of it as a reservoir. You need 3 to 5 years in your reservoir of things that go down very little or not at all, sometimes known as cash. But in a world of very low interest rates or zero on cash, don't want to own a lot of cash there. But in the reservoir of very low volatility things, we're not going to earn a lot. So I don't really want 5 years worth of really low earning stuff. Too big a drag on the portfolio, right? So what I think we want to do here is we want to think of the reservoir as having that drain that we're taking our income out of. But into the reservoir is both snow melt and rainwater. The rainwater is the constant dividends and income coming from stocks, REITs, real estate investment trusts, business development corporations, things like that that are generating regular, consistent, and importantly, growing streams of income. So that even though the reservoir is not full, it's not draining very fast because it's getting constant rainwater from all kinds of assets. And then when our portfolio is working really well, we get a great and incredible, like we've had, bull market. You can take and pull money, the snow melt, and you harvest your gains to replenish. But when the market is down, you don't touch. Don't touch those assets when markets are down. Okay, that's overly simplistic. I get it. But that's how you would basically see an income-generating portfolio. What does dynamic mean? How about we take care of our bills? Let's call it 3%. That just takes care of my bills. That's what I need. I got my Social Security, million-dollar portfolio, and I'm going to need another $30,000 a year. Minimum. Okay? That doesn't account for all the trips I want to take and all these other things we want to do. That's separate. Dynamics says this. When we're not having a bad market, and I don't mean flat. Flat's fine, up is great, but down is not good. Down means you don't get any extra. You just pay your bills that year. Up means, take a bunch out. Now, the reason I love dynamic is because you can obviously shift, and you're not worried. You know, so if you're on a level income, the good years are paying for the bad years, right? And so you can't have extra. You're taking it all. So there's really no room to take extra in good years. Now you have good years or great years, or you're stacking years the way bull markets run, right? They can be multi-year. And then you can take big chunks out as you go. Love that. So if we could take it and set it up where every month It's like, bam, here's my money, boom, boom, boom. And your portfolio is just generating it automatically and growing so that as your cost of living goes up, that needs to go up. And that's fairly easy in this world, even at 3%. Very easy. You know, there's just so many dividend-paying stocks. And I don't mean you buy one stock. One stock could, like, could be IBM, and it blows up, right? It could be GE, it blows up. But a portfolio of them doesn't blow up. They just keep rising. So what I'm saying is you create a portfolio of dividend increasers, paying most of that, maybe a little bit of equity income in there, meaning some bonds, and then you have a portfolio generating your basic needs. And then when things go really well, you can take huge amounts out because you still have your basic income needs met. That's a dynamic income. And it's really kind of a neat thing for people to plan for and do. And it doesn't have to be like at the moment. It's like, okay, now we need the $30,000 we were going to take out for the anniversary trip. No, the market's good. Let's roll it back last year, okay? We've had a phenomenal run in the market through the beginning of this year. And it kept, it came back in, until recently. But what I'm saying is, why would you, if you were going to take a January 1st, 2019 trip, why would you wait till January 1st, 2019? You wouldn't. So all of the plans are shared with your advisor so that it's set aside. You, right? You're not looking at the market generally. You're not. But you go, hey, we're going to go. I want that 30 grand. The market's been great. Right? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Double check. Yeah, it's been great. Well, we're going to need it in another year. Then take it out. And that's not a hindsight look at things. So what if the market went up another 12% or 15% on 30 grand? Does that ruin your portfolio? No. That's why you get it out when times are good, when it's within sight of you needing it. And sight isn't 5 years out, by the way. Sight is close. Okay? But that's dynamic and that's fun. That's really fun because you can do really cool things. Really cool things. You just have to time it with the markets. That's all. When it's good, you go. When it's not, you pay your bills. That's all. That's, by the way, how we've always lived our life, isn't it? Right? I mean, pretend you're like, well, every year we take a summer vacation. And now, and dad's a building contractor. And now it is, right? I certainly remember the early 80s in Boise. That's when I started my career. Interest rate's 20%. We're not going to Disneyland this year. 2008, I'm not building any houses right now. We're not going to Disneyland right now. It's how we live our life. We're not buying a new car right now. That's all. That's all. That's all. We cut back, we pay our bills to what, or you have a static, and that's fine. There's nothing wrong with static retirement. It's how most people live it. Just want to toss the idea out. Dynamic is fun. I can't remember who triggered that last week in a phone call, but wanted to cover it. All right, we got to take a quick break. And right now, I need your phone calls desperately and or emails at dave@petsofinancial.net. Our phone number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. We'll be right back. Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. Our number here is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. I hope you had a great Christmas. Seriously, it's been a rough market, to say the least. And but hats off to our clients. It just, the phone's not ringing off the hook. It's tremendous. I think people are getting it. I really do. I really, really do. And but it is hard. I get it. And I hope everybody did have a great Christmas. Our number here is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Let's go to Terry. Terry, thanks for calling. Go ahead, please.
Professor Petzl, how's the leg?
It's healing. I'm getting there. I'm getting there.
Oh, cool. Just make sure you pay attention to your physical terrorist because it'll get better.
It will. It will. And it is. I just continue, and it's funny because I have grandkids, little kids running around, and so it's like, give me my boot. need the protection. I need the protection. They're, I mean, I love it. I want to, you know, but it's like they're just, you know, they're just so energetic, you know.
They're all enthusiastic.
And they are. They are. And I'm looking forward to it because Papa can't do what he likes to do and what the grandkids like. So I can't wait to get going again. But anyway, we're getting there.
Okay, well, I guess I wasn't paying attention when I brought you my money, and during the briefing, I'm supposed to spend it?
You can't. You absolutely are, yes. Have fun. Enjoy.
No, I'm still watching the talking heads, especially during the up-down couple of weeks we've been having.
Mm-hmm.
But thanks to y'all, all I'm doing now is just sort of chuckling at them, watching the panic go by and saying, huh, this is how it's supposed to work, huh?
It is how it's supposed to work. I'm glad you said that. You know, you bring up an interesting point because it's something that for a long time we have, you know, and if you listen closely and whoever does, our opening thing here is, and really our thing is trying to bring financial peace to our clients for whatever 30, however many years, right? And that's true. But it's not just a saying. It's something we are pointed towards. But we can't do that. We can't make people not fuss.
Right.
It's up to them. And so all we can do is point that direction and say, yeah, you know, if you choose to be fussed about something, I can't stop you. I can't fix you. You can't fix people, right? A good buddy of mine helped me out with that a number of years ago. He just kind of pointed out something that actually it was a priest that had said that you can't fix them. No matter how hard we try, people have to fix themselves. And we can all lead them. But you can't make them stop fussing, and some people won't. I get that, but it's hard. You got to try. So I appreciate you saying that, Terry. That's exactly what we're trying to do, and I'm glad you feel that.
Yeah, I went to my former golf partner's 80th birthday last night and met up with a guy who is sort of a rabbi to me when I was out at the guard. And one of the things he always said is, you can't. No, the fixed people, but people that want to wake up in the morning with their default switch set to either the excited or the pissed off position, there's nothing you can do about that.
Great point. Right. You can't.
So
you just
anyway,
can't.
I just thought I'd call in since you were yelling so hard for people to call you.
I appreciate it. I do. It's good to know that there's a few folks out there. So thank you for doing so.
All right. And have a happy New Year, Dave.
Hey, you do the same, Terry. Happy New Year. Thanks.
Good day.
Bye-bye. And our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Along with that, I wanted to quickly jump on an email that just came in, and we've got a couple other emails I'll get to later today. But just heard yet again that last Monday's drop in the Dow was the worst slide in history. Drives me nuts that financial reporting is dead wrong and is requoted as being gospel. Mark. Thanks, Mark. I appreciate that, and I'll tell you, it was the very worst Christmas Eve in history. What a statement, what a ridiculous statement that is, right? It's the very worst June 16th in all of history. Huh? Okay. That's weird, but it has been this big news thing, and again, it just kind of takes off on this whole new hatred of Donald Trump so much that the economy booming can't be him. It must be like Bill Clinton or certainly Barack Obama is doing it from some bunker somewhere. And that the policies he has didn't really change the economy. It just, and it's really not that good. And because women are oppressed, and because I know a guy who can't get a job because he's got a bone in his nose, and they will not make him president of the company. And he's really qualified otherwise, except for the bone in his nose. So it's all discrimination. We've got to fix that. I don't know what people are thinking, but they make stuff up. And the same thing is true with the markets. It's like, oh, I gotta, it's like a dog with a bone. I got to tell people how bad this is, how horrible. It's the worst day ever. So, yeah, it was the worst Christmas Eve ever. And I think June 13th was the worst June 13th ever in history. Unbelievably weird reporting. This is a weird time. And so everything is so overreported. It is so super true what Terry was just saying. We got to dial it back. If you watch news, I had this discussion just yesterday. It's just, yeah, I'm a news junkie. Then you have no chance. You have no chance in life. None. Absolutely none. No chance in life of understanding what's going on. We can't. We can't, because it's just so noisy. You can't decipher it. It's the atmosphere that the equity index annuity pimps thrive in, is fear. They just grab it and take headlines and quotes. Or how many times have you read online that Warren Buffett says you need to sell now? What? He's never said that. I mean, never said that. That's just absurd, right? I mean, it's everything's taken out, but this is just constant pounding, right? And especially when you add in, oh, I hate that guy. The White House, I hate that guy. And 90% or more of the media are liberal or super liberal. So what do you do? And they're not reporters anymore. They're not journalists anymore. They're political ops. I mean, all they are ops for the DNC. That's it. So why would we listen to them all the time? It does not bring peace in your life. And it certainly doesn't bring clarity to investing. It really doesn't. Or anything in life. We have to turn it off. It's really that important. It's really that critical. It really is. Anyway, thanks for the email. I appreciate it. I share that sentiment with you. It's just insane. It's just insane, the reporting. All right, we got to take a quick break. When we come back, Phil, Don, you're up to bat, but I got to take a break here for Fox News. We're at 580-KIDO. Hello, welcome, and Happy New Year to everybody. Hope you had a great Christmas. Our number is 580-KIDO. Let's start jumping on the phones. Let's go to Phil. Phil, thanks for holding. Go ahead, please.
Hi, good morning, Dave.
Good morning.
I sold some stocks this week to harvest some losses to offset some capital gains.
Okay, good move.
On the recommendation of my accountant. And I'm just wondering, I'm not planning on buying these same stocks back, so I'm not worried about that 31-day rule.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just wondering when to jump back in the market with that, you know, 10% of my portfolio.
Right now. I don't think you want to try to time it, Phil. I think otherwise you are. And so, for example, let me say, for example, you're giving up on, I don't know, I'm just going to make up a name. You're giving up on Micron, okay? And it's a growth company. And so you say, okay, I don't want to own it again. Maybe I'll go ahead and buy a position in Google, okay? Another growth company, or a mutual fund, or an exchange traded fund. In other words, if you feel like your portfolio is the way you want it, growth versus value, small versus large, international, domestic, income-oriented or not, depending on what your needs are. In other words, you generally like the portfolio. You're just doing this for a tax move, right?
Right.
Then just find something similar to it. Or come back to it in 30 days, like you said. If you're thinking, nah, this is a good chance for me to sell, and you know what? I don't want to own GE anymore. I just have no confidence in the company. Then don't. It's not a growth company. It's not an income story either. So don't. Move on. But I would put that money back in. We got a 10 to 20% correction in here, generally speaking, one. Two, dividend-paying stocks for the first time in years have taken a hit. And they are the lowest risk, highest performers long-term that the market has. And now you finally have a chance to get in. Do so. Three, you've just got to be thinking in terms of some of these stocks are down 20, 30%. Like if you liked Apple at 200, you ought to love it at 150. You know what I'm saying? This is nothing different about Apple. Well, what about iPhone sales? I got it. All you have to do is look back over the last 10 years. You've got constant stories of why you don't want to own Apple, which was a bad idea to not own Apple. My point is not that Apple's going to the moon. I don't know. But you should be thinking about owning now and not trying to time the next down move in the market. The noise is too loud, and you will not get any clarity if you turn on the TV. I swear to goodness you won't. It will not tell you when we're near a bottom. The more you listen, the worse it'll get.
Okay. So say the figures just round it off to $70,000 bucks. Would you just put it all in one day in whatever stocks you're gonna or mutual funds you're gonna buy,
if
or would you spread it out over a few days? Or?
No, you can if you want. For example, let's say you've identified you want to buy 3 stocks, 25 each, right? Okay, just picking a number, okay. And you go in and you say, okay, I'm fine. I'm ready to go. It's Monday. And then you find out one of them's up 2%. The other two are flat for the day. And the market's, you know, basically up a little bit or something. Buy the two that are flat. Mm-hmm. Wait on the third. That's the kind of thing I would do. But other than that, it's only 10% of your portfolio. You did this for tax reasons. I'd move on. Just put it in. Okay.
And what's your opinion on, I'm not really a big fan of individual stocks.
Yep.
Just because I don't know if I'm smart enough.
Yep.
But so normally I've been doing mutual funds and ETFs.
Good move.
How about putting that into a S&P 500 ETF or a worldwide ETF?
I like it. I prefer an overall market to the S&P. Meaning you've got some that basically include mid cap as well as large. Okay, so I would prefer that to an S&P, which is really only 50 stocks. 50 are over 50% of the index. And so you're really saying I want only the giants and I only want U.S. So I don't think we want that for diversification. So at least if you're going to go all U.S., go all U.S. market.
Okay, great.
Okay?
Thanks, I appreciate it.
You got it, Phil. Have a great – Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
Thanks for the call. Bye-bye. And let's go to Don. Don, thank you for for crying out loud. I did it again. All right, Ray will fix it. Don, are you there, though?
Yes, go ahead.
Good. We can talk. I just can't get rid of you.
That's okay.
You're stuck, man. I mean, otherwise Ray's got it. Yeah, he's going to fix it. All right. You're good now.
All right.
I can get rid of you, so don't cuss. You can't get away with it.
Thanks for taking my call. I got a 401k. I turned 70 and a half on January 20, and I want to know the last day I can withdraw that money out. You know, they say I have to take it out. Is that, if that's true, then I want to know the last possible day I can take it out.
Okay. You say on this January 20 or last?
This coming January 20.
The December 31st, assuming it's not a Saturday. Anyway, last business day of the year.
Oh, okay.
Next year.
So,
yep.
But then it's still on the income tax for that year.
Correct.
Ah, they got me.
They got you no matter what. That's right. Don, they got you. They got you. I'll tell you what you can do if you really aren't using the money and you just really don't want it. You can certainly transfer that. It's qualified charitable giving. And you can just transfer up to your required minimum distribution to a charity, and you can do it tax-free.
Oh, okay.
Because you're giving it away. Because you're giving it away. Okay?
All right. Appreciate it.
You got it, Don. You have a good day.
You bet.
Bye now.
All right. Bye-bye.
And Happy New Year to everybody. And I have a feeling this is my buddy Dan. Dan, how you doing? Dan, are you there? Oh, no. All right. Well, if you can hear me and you can't, whatever, call back. I'll tell you what we're going to do before we get to Smitty. Smitty, you're up to bat next. We are going to take our final break so you have plenty of time on the other side. Smitty, hang in there, and our number is 580-KIDO. If you were trying to ring in, now is your chance. We'd love to visit with you. Hello, everybody. Welcome, and I do hope you had a great Christmas and a Happy New Year coming up. As far as the market goes, I'm pretty sure we do want to turn the calendar over, huh? All right, let's go ahead and go to the phones real quick. It looks like we've got Dan calling back. Dan, are you there this time?
Yes, I am. Are you there?
I am. We didn't move, man.
Hey, just real quick, you're talking about a dynamic income and all that. You know, about a year and a half ago, you know, we had 248,000 miles on our Lexus. It was time to upgrade, so we just took a sweep and paid cash for Subaru, right? So we're done there. That was in 2017 around Halloween. So didn't really affect things. Sitting around over Christmas with our 4 kids. And how about, you know, the kids say, hey, Dad, how about like Mexico, spring break next year? I said, girls, maybe in a couple of years. Right now, our money's staying put. So just a bit of a reality check. And the look on their face was like, oh, it doesn't just keep flowing. No, it doesn't.
That's great. That's great.
Finally, I just wanted to say, Dave, thanks for being in today, being in during this holiday season. you know, I ran a business for 25 years. You have rough seas, right? And that's at the rough seas where you need to get up, stand at the helm. And I know you've made yourself extremely available to your clients. And you're probably not getting a lot of calls because they have a lot of trust and they know that you're at the helm. So I just want to personally thank you for that. And I'm sure there's dozens and hundreds of other people that are saying the same thing.
Well, thank you, sir. I appreciate that. It's very good. And I know, like you said, you ran a business for a number of years. And not all times are, you know, like I say, it's chicken and feathers sometimes. And so we got to work a little harder when we're down to the feathers.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, Happy New Year. We're looking forward to 19.
Likewise. All right. Have a good day. Happy New Year. Thanks for the call. Bye-bye. And let's go ahead and run on over to Smitty. Smitty, thank you for holding. Go ahead, please.
This is Smitty, Dave. Do you hear me?
I sure can. Fire away. Thanks for waiting.
A couple of quick questions, Dave. Is now a good time to buy a mutual fund, and do you see CD rates going up to maybe 3-3.5%?
Depends on how long-term. Yes, you can get CDs long-term now at 3, but I think they're clear out to 5 years in order to do that, and I would not do that. But as far as when people say, do I see CD rates getting up to 3, they're there, but long-term. Do I see them getting there on a 1 year? Not yet. But they're going to be getting close. But we can already get 2 in money markets. So why not? Why tie your money up when you can get 2 if you're talking about short-term needs or safety needs? As far as investing, is it a good time to buy mutual funds? Absolutely. Number one, we've just finished the year-end distributions. Okay, so we've gotten through the year-end distributions, and you're not going to be buying a tax problem. So the answer is yes, and plus the market's down. It's a great time if you've identified what kind of fund to buy. This is a great time to be buying, in my opinion. Doesn't mean it won't get better next week. I say that all the time. But if you buy on dips, as I opened up today's program in the 8 o'clock hour, I gave a living example of a mutual fund that's been around since the 1940s. Every time you've bought it down 10%, you've had huge gains just 3 years later. Three years. And that's only 10% down. So we're down 10%, and in growth areas, we're down 20+. Man, I just think it's a great time to buy. But if you're waiting for that magic moment, you'll never have that, and you'll miss all these dips. I had this conversation real quick here, Smitty. I don't know that you're asking all this, but it just brings this up. I had this conversation this week with somebody who was really worried early in the week, right, about the market, and understand, and they're fairly new. And I said, I know this is going to sound crazy, and this isn't why you called. You're calling to say, I'm not sure if we should be in this, and I don't know if I want to sell out. What you need to do, what you have to do, is you have to send me a check. I don't care if it's $100. But you've got to add to your investments when they're down. It changes the whole dynamic of how you think. You need to do this. Trust me. It doesn't matter the amount. I don't care if you send me $100, you send me $10,000. Just get it in your account. You have to do something. That's how you overcome the fear of downturns, is you invest into them. And so, yes, invest.
Okay. Hey, thanks a lot, Dave. You're a great guy.
Thanks. Thanks, Smitty. Happy New Year.
You too.
Bye now. And our number is, if you want, call us in, 580-5436, 580-KIDO. All right, let's go ahead and go to, let's just a second here. We got this. There it is right here. Yes, covered calls. I knew I had one I wanted to get to today. Michael, thanks for your patience on this. You sent this so much earlier today. Do you ever consider selling puts to generate income? And if exercise, create a good entry point to a position? Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely, I do. I do it on a very regular basis with high-quality stocks that take a hit. So if I want to add to a position, I do. It's too complicated, and it is risky, and people get carried away with it, blah, blah, blah. It's not risky inherently if you simply have the cash. Like you said, covered puts, but there's really not a covered put unless you have a short position, and I don't think that's what you're referring to. But covered meaning you have the cash set aside, I believe is what you're asking. If I put, let's just use an example. I put $50,000, I have it in cash, and I write a put for a stock for 10, meaning 1,000 shares at $50, okay, and I have the cash to buy it. then I'm covered. It doesn't. That's not naked in the sense that, wow, if it goes down, I don't have the money. I just take the loss, right? So when you're having a put, then you have to have the cash there, and then it can give you a low entry point. So let's say a stock is real volatile. It falls down to right around 50, and you say, I'd take anything below 50 would be great. I want to go ahead and write an option on that. So you might say, for 3 months from now, an option at 50 might get you 2,000. Depends how volatile the market is. I hate to say for sure, but $2,000 you could have, which effectively means you're buying the stock at 48. If it goes below 50, that's what you're doing. So yes, you have to have it covered. I do consider doing it. It's way too complicated, and people can get carried away. They can write and write and write and write, and almost all of them are going to expire worthless. They really do. But man, you get in a bear market, you may find yourself owing $1 million that you don't have, and the stock can get put to you way before the January because somebody wants to get the dividend. There's all kinds of things you have to be aware of. Don't do this without experience. Do not do this willy-nilly, and know who you are. If you have trouble with gambling, don't go to the casino. If you have trouble with trading, don't start doing things like this. It'll suck you in, okay? It's no different than anything else. You have to know who you are. Is this a true, thoughtful strategy for getting into positions you want at a favorable price, and you're willing to be patient? Okay. But otherwise, don't do this, okay? So the answer is yes, occasionally I do. And I've had 35 years experience, day in and day out, watching people lose zillions of dollars, reading about it, studying it, making lots of mistakes myself. So I say this with great caution. It's okay, but you got to have the right temperament. You got to have the right experience, okay? So be very, very careful, all right? Appreciate that email, though. Great question. Really great question. But again, watch very, very carefully. It's not something to be played around with, okay? All right. That's it for that. On to the next. Now, the one final thing I want to kind of close out today, same thing I started with today. People don't want to buy in times like this. It's not our human nature. It is not. Our human nature isn't good for investing, though. Our human nature, frankly, isn't good for lots of things. Human relations. I don't like you. I think I'll kill you. Maybe that's human nature. Okay? Caveman just killed whoever he didn't like. Caveman grabbed cavewoman whenever he wanted. Stronger? Take her. Why not? We don't do that. And we don't even think. And I'm not being vulgar. I'm just saying this is our natural instinct. So if our natural instinct is to just, oh, I'm just going to sell, are you reacting to that natural instinct? Are you? I don't want to buy. I need out. I just heard this guy and I was really freaked out. I don't know what to do. Then turn the TV off. Don't be a news junkie. What's the matter with you? If you can't, don't. And I don't even know why anybody be a news junkie, for crying out loud. I know I'm on news talk radio. I got it. But why? Does it lead you to closer relationships? No. It leads you to be angry, frustrated, and quit pushing the button every day on what your net worth is. Is that what you're worth? Is what your net worth is? It's not going to make you feel better. Here's what you do. You solve the problem by writing a check of any size. You either send it to the Boise Rescue Mission or you put it in your account. That's how you overcome the fear. Have a great New Year's, everybody. I'll talk to you next week. Thanks for joining us.